You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
September the 9th, 2020, both Trump and Biden are now on the campaign trail. Yes, yes, Biden's out of the basement. He's on the campaign trail. He's in Michigan. That is a state that Trump carried, but by fewer than 10,000 votes in 2016. Trump campaign already planning 18 appearances in 11 states over the next 6 days. An NBC News Marist poll just released yesterday shows that Trump and Biden are tied in Florida. Tied in Florida. The poll has a margin of error of 4.5%. Other sources are stating that President Trump's recent gains in South Florida and Miami-Dade County are because he's appealing to Cuban and Latino voters, and the Biden campaign is not. And, of course, the issue that Biden has to deal with in some of the states is his position on getting rid of fossil fuel. We have industries all across our nation in various states in various ways that feed families, hundreds of thousands of families, because of our current energy processes and projects. But Biden had insisted, if I'm president, we will stop fracking. Well, that's not a very good message for Western Pennsylvania in particular, because they need those jobs. And it's the same story in Texas and Oklahoma. But Biden is suddenly changing a little bit. Oh, let me say shifting gears. Oh, let me say backing up. No, let me just say he's rolling over again. Because even after he guaranteed a young woman in New Hampshire recently, I will end fossil fuels if I'm president, he now says on August 31st in Pittsburgh, I'm not banning fracking, no matter how many times Donald Trump lies about me. Trump, by the way, warning again, that if Biden wins the election, it will benefit China. I just had an expert on China in the previous hour. If you missed it, make sure you go to Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. It'll be up as a podcast shortly so you can hear that entire interview. In the meantime, you got a balance I'll provide for you. Former Secretary of State John Kerry says, well, if Trump wins, Russia wins. See, I'll give you both sides. Sometimes there's a lot of difficulty finding some good news, some good, valuable news. And I think right now, the way things are happening in New York with COVID, it's not good. When they've been told that New York City restaurants may not open for indoor dining until June, and you got the governor of the state blaming the outbreak of the coronavirus in New York entirely on Trump, saying he was too little too late to ban travel from Europe. He did that in March. The preceding month, he had banned flights direct from China, because we knew that's where it originated, and immediately he was called xenophobic and mocked by Biden, Pelosi, and the rest of them. And then when they realized, you know, there are a lot of flights coming out of Europe, specifically Italy, that are going right into New York, and they might also be spreading it, we need to shut those flights down for a while. And Cuomo says, Trump caused the outbreak. Yeah, and how many lives are you responsible for? Forcing nursing homes to take elderly people, even if they're COVID-19 positive. Well, here's some positive news for you. Senator Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, submitting a bill to Congress authorizing the Justice Department to raise salaries of state and local police forces all across the country, except for cities that had chosen to defund law enforcement in the wake of national protests and riots. It is titled the David Dorn Back the Blue Act. Named for David Dorn, retired St. Louis police captain, shot and killed during the looting in St. Louis. That's something that's of value. And here's a piece of news. I if this is going to upset you, I'm sorry. I'm going to tell you. You're no longer going to be able to keep up with the Kardashians anymore. In a joint statement, they say the program Keeping Up with the Kardashians is coming to an end. 14 years, 20 seasons, hundreds of episodes. Oh, my. Are you weeping out there? Do you care? You know why I put this in here? Just so I can do this. No, I don't care about the Kardashians. I don't care to keep up with them. And if you do, well, so be it. Now you'll have to watch reruns, specials, or whatever else you might want to do.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Tom Wellington and his staff at Wellington Environmental have certainly been busy over the last several weeks, making sure businesses and hospitals and nursing homes are clear of COVID-19. As you begin to reopen, try to restart your business, I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. I'll give you a phone number in a moment. They can come in, assess the situation at a very reasonable cost, and make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And even after you're open, if something comes up and you're not sure, again, you want to contact Wellington Environmental. And not only for COVID-19, for any other threat, mold, any toxic situation. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. In business for 30 years, you know they're doing it right. Be well with Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Bill Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Traveling in a fighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? A woman born.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Every single outcome here, because it's going to take a while to count, could end up with street violence, and you don't get a declared winner on election night, and you have all kinds of ballots rejected due to error, never mind fraud. Do you think any of this or all of this is likely to happen?
Well, you have to be prepared for everything.
Have to be prepared for everything. That was CNN host Erin Burnett on her program asking House Oversight Committee Chair Carolyn Maloney, Democrat of New York, about the possibility of election violence and, of course, ballots being rejected due to mistakes or fraud. And Maloney was using it as a softball to say you got to be prepared, and then quickly jumped into talking about that's why we need my bill to fully fund the post office so they can perform their duty. But there is a question that still was unanswered. And, of course, Erin Burnett did not follow up with that, asking specifically about violence, because there are increasing rumors and stories and suggestions that's going to happen, even to the extent that Mark Zuckerberg is now warning there could be civil unrest and violence if the result of the election is not immediately known. That's what he's saying. In an interview with Axios, he said, we're trying to make sure we do our part. Now, I want to stop it right there and let you fill in the blanks. You know what he thinks you think he'd probably be doing. But he said, we're trying to make sure we do our part to make sure that none of this is organized on Facebook. Facebook, Twitter, all of those are active when it comes to social media messaging to where we're having a riot, when to show up, what to bring. He says, we're trying to do our part to make sure it's not organized on Facebook. Yeah, right. You're partly responsible for it happening anyway. But let me give you more details than just that approach. There is a coalition, as they're described, a coalition, according to the Daily Beast, of leftist groups secretly discussing how to mobilize and prepare for what it envisions is a political apocalypse, full of violence and chaos if Biden fails to win a landslide victory. This source describing the coalition effort, named and dubbed the Democracy Defense Nerve Center, says, and I quote, Occupy S, I can't say the full four-letter word, you can understand it. Occupy S, hold space, shut things down, not just on election day, but for weeks. And apparently they've been planning this on some of their Zoom virtual meetings, according to Daily Beast. Over the course of 2 hours, the participants had questions about what we can functionally do in a series of election scenarios, charting out what it's going to take to stand up to a multi-state communications arm to fight disinformation, a training program for nonviolent civil disobedience. An unnamed aide to the Biden campaign told the Daily Beast, yes, we're aware of the concerns expressed by many of these leftist groups. They're actively planning for all contingencies and scenarios. But they're already wanting to push that the election will be illegitimate unless Biden wins. And not just wins, but he gets a landslide over Trump. If that doesn't happen, they're ready to, quote, go to war. I've been asked, I'm thinking back maybe 2-3 years ago on this program, I had a caller when we took more calls asking, do you think we're going to have a civil war again? And I said, no, not in the sense of what we had then. We would still have discourse and things of that nature, violence of various parts. But it won't be, quote, a civil war. Now I'm not so sure because of the way things have been going. Now I'm also looking at a piece written in the Federalist. The author here is, let me get his name here. I always want to give credit because they deserve it. And, of course, there's always a thin line between credit and blame. In case they're wrong, they get blame as well. But I think it's a pretty good piece. All I can find is Hakim, the last name being the Hakim. But he's saying that Democrats recently joining forces and blaming Trump, fanning the flames of violence. And he does talk about Karen Bass, Democrat of California, as she was reported in the publication The Hill, slamming the president's scheduled visit to Kenosha in wake of protests over the police shooting of Jacob Blake. And, of course, you have the House Intel Committee Chairman, Adam Schiff, of course, Democrat of California, also saying, yes, the president is fanning the flames of this fire. And Joe Biden's deputy campaign manager chimed in and said, Trump is inciting violence. Well, this piece also says a lot of insightful rhetoric has come from those on the left. In fact, here's a quote from Congresswoman Maxine Waters, Democrat, California. If you see anybody from that cabinet, talking about Trump's cabinet, and we ran this bite some time ago, if you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd and you push back on them. And you tell them you're not welcome anymore anywhere. In other words, encouraging them to get up in their face. Cory Booker did the same thing. Senator Cory Booker, Democrat, encouraging people to, quote, get up in the face of some congresspeople. Nicole Wallace encouraged Jeb Bush to punch Trump in the face. Madonna talked about blowing out the White House. She been charged? Nope. Johnny Depp talking about assassinating a president. We've documented many of those, obviously, numerous times. And who is really responsible for the violence we're having now? Well, it's those who are not doing their job. Or those that are trying to do their job, but they're held back by blue city mayors and governors and those who just really want to side with the anarchists anyway, and defund police departments. We have numerous police officials across the nation stepping down. Dallas police chief, a black woman, says, I'm out of here. You're cutting my our police funding. I can't do the job. I can't protect my folks. I'm out. Same thing happened in Seattle with that black female police chief. Rochester mayor, the Rochester police chief, after 20 years, said, I'm retiring. He said, we've been under false attacks. Cuomo has no idea what to do. I correct that. That didn't come from him. That's from Trump. Trump saying Cuomo has no idea what to do. New York State's a mess. No money. High taxes. Crime. Everyone fleeing. That all involved, by the way, the Rochester case where police were trying to control a man, 41 years old, a black man, name of Prude. He's on the street. He's shown that he's absolutely naked. They're holding him to the ground. They put a spit hood on him because he had COVID-19, didn't want the officers to be spit on, and he ends up suffocating under the hood or the way he was held down. The investigation's still underway. But those on the left are not going to wait for the full investigation. And so many members of the police department, the chief says, you know, you guys are ruining our reputation. And if you're going to continue to hold us back on some things when we're trying to do it right, I'm out of here. Not many on the left have been condemning this rioting, have they? Nope, they don't. And, of course, you got the journalists who join in with it. They kind of add their own personal little support. Boots on the ground correspondent in Chicago, Andrew, sent this to me, called it up to my attention. This is out of the New York Post, written by Carol Markowitz. And it's titled, Journalist Social Media Snark About Urban Safety is Grotesque Gaslighting. Big headline. Let me break it down for you. She begins by saying American cities are in trouble. In the wake of COVID-19 lockdowns, increasing crime, disorder, residents are fleeing urban areas, especially New York City. Continuing looting, riots, sowing feelings of deep insecurity, but then you got journalistic elites who refuse to see reality and mock the rest of us as we note these trends. She's referring to what New York Times columnist Paul Krugman had put in a multi-part tweet. He says, I went for a New York City run this morning and am sorry to report that I saw very few black-clad anarchists. Also, the city is not yet in flames. In other words, see, there's nothing happening here. That is very akin to the report I told you about yesterday that documented 93 to 97% of protests across the nation. I think it's 93% across the nation this summer have been peaceful. But where the violence happened, it was vicious, damaging, dangerous. But again, hey, the rest of the nation's okay. Well, same thing in New York City. The rioting in New York City, the rioting and going down the Magnificent Mile in Chicago. It's all right there. It's not happening 4, 6, 7, 8 blocks away. Oh, we're not on fire here. No trouble here. So you just want to dismiss it and suggest the members of the right are responsible for making something out of nothing. The writer for the New York Post, commenting about the remarks by New York columnist Paul Krugman about, hey, I walked down my street, ran down the street, didn't see any big problem. She said, well, of course he isn't threatened. Blood isn't staining sidewalks of the kind of hood that he calls home. Said, look at any Monday morning story about weekend violence. The Bronx, Greenpoint, Rockaway. But Krugman and members of his social class have nothing to worry about. So their jolly experience proves nothing. That's absolutely correct. A CNN correspondent had tweeted about, here I am eating my breakfast burrito in, quote, a wonderful Portland, where the city is not under siege, the buildings are not burning to the ground. It didn't help that the night before there was a riot where the mob marched on the mayor's home, set it on fire, to the extent the mayor had to move. Sit there munching on burrito. This is the way these folks play the game. I'll give you another example. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, obviously always denouncing Trump and that border wall. We don't want a border wall. We don't want a border wall. We should not have a border fence and wall. You know what she's doing now around her mansion in Lansing, Michigan? They're putting up an 8-foot-high fence, part of a $1.1 million security program for the governor. Oh, she'll have her fence. She'll have her protection. You? You just suffer. We'll take a break when we come back. The first voice you're going to hear is Tucker Carlson from his program and talking about, as we move into this subject of understanding critical race theory, critical race theory diversity programs. What are they? The next two segments, we're going to be focusing on it. You don't want to miss it. Please stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
USA. Larry Connors, USA.
On Friday, the president issued an executive order forcing federal agencies to halt mandatory indoctrination on something called critical race theory. What exactly is critical race theory? Well, if you work in the government or in corporate America, you probably already know what it is. It's when your employer hires a lavishly paid consultant to tell half the room they're damned to hell because of the way they were born. In a word, critical race theory is racism.
Clearly, racism. Those are the words of Tucker Carlson from his Fox program. As I said, this segment and the next segment, we're going to be focusing on the critical race theory and how it's being presented and used by the left, pretty much as Carlson just said. You must be privileged in somehow or another, so you should feel bad about it, period. It is more racism. And Christopher Rufo with the Discovery Institute, also published in various publications, had noted the other day that the FBI had started its own critical race diversity program inside the FBI.
Critical race theory has actually now infiltrated our criminal justice system. Just this week, I released a story that the FBI is now holding weekly seminars on intersectionality, which is a hard left academic theory that reduces people to a network of racial, gender, and sexual orientation identities that intersect in complex ways and determine whether you are an oppressor or oppressed.
And of course, if you don't sign on to this thing, well, then you're going to be labeled a racist. This follows exactly what I've been saying for several weeks now. All these major corporations and then sporting teams putting up BLM, giving donations, putting it on their labels, American Airlines deciding the flight attendants can wear BLM pins on their uniforms. What about Back to Blue? How about just an American flag? All of it has been done, the companies and the sports teams basically being extorted. If you don't do it, we'll call you out for being racist. So this, now they're pushing this critical race theory diversity program. And Tucker Carlson again says, this is not going to support us, not going to bring us together. It will divide us.
Unfortunately, critical race theory is a lie from the first word to the last, from start to finish. It is vicious. It is cruel. It divides the country potentially for good. It makes Americans hate each other. It's a tragedy in that way. It is also, and you cannot say this enough because it is true, it is also the very definition of the racism they are claiming to fight. And yet it is everywhere. Critical race theory is what apparently informed Kamala Harris just today when she said that she was, quote, proud of Jacob Blake. Blake is a man credibly accused of sexual assault. How could Harris say that? Because she doesn't care what Jacob Blake did or didn't do. She only cares what color he is. According to critical race theory, that's all that matters.
And to that extent, Megyn Kelly also slamming Kamala Harris about that. Said Harris, you're proud of him. He's accused of breaking into a sleeping woman's house, sexually assaulting her, humiliating her, later returning, harassing her. Then the cops she called for help say he resisted arrest, assaulted them, went for his knife. How about a word for his victim, Senator? Yes, Jacob Blake is a man who was shot repeatedly in the back as he's leaning into his car. The officers did try to stop him from ever getting in the car. That's all yet to be worked out. I'm not passing judgment one way or the other, but the bottom line is there is more to come on that story. And there's more to come on this critical race theory. My guest, David Marcus, next segment.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
USA. Larry Connors, USA.
All right, as we were discussing in the previous segment, setting up for understanding the critical race theory and some of the pieces already, first beginning with President Trump removing critical race theory from diversity programs in the administration, calling it anti-American propaganda. I want to expand that again. My guest is David Marcus, Federalist New York correspondent. Welcome aboard, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I want to get into an article you wrote, but before we do, and you know this, but I want to share just quickly with the audience just how big of an issue this is. You, of course, know about the writings of Dr. James, let me get the name here, James Lindsay, 8 Big Reasons Critical Race Theory is Terrible for Dealing with Racism, and he begins to saying, I need to offer apologies. It's been growing for over 40 years, a big, deep problem. And he said, I've gotten 8 pages of this. It's still not nearly complete. In other words, getting a full understanding of this is difficult, and yet it's also very simple. And that is that it's more racism. Is that correct?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Well, and you're a white man. So based upon what they are claiming in this kind of training, that you and all the other white people you know, you are basically responsible and contributing to racism.
But yes, that's correct. That would include children as well.
Yeah, children. So again, David, the piece you were writing is that you were applauding President Trump to remove it from the diversity programs. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I mean, look, a lot of this is rooted in the fact that right now in the United States, we have two very, very different definitions of racism and what it means. The traditional definition is mostly held by people on the right, and that traditional definition requires intent. It requires that you believe one group is superior to another. It requires that you treat people differently based on the color of their skin. It's the concept of racism that anyone over the age of 40 grew up with. Beginning in the 1990s, a competing version came into being, in large part because that overt racism that was more commonplace in the 50s, 60s, and 70s was really melting away. You just didn't see much of it. So they replaced that with this concept of systemic racism, where racism isn't something you do. You don't even have to intend to be racist. You don't have to believe that anybody's better than anybody else. You don't have to treat people differently. Simply the way the United States is structured and has been structured from its founding automatically makes it and all of the people who are white or in a position of power racist. These are two very different competing definitions. There was a time when I thought that there might be some compromise that could be made. I don't think there is anymore. I think that we just need to call the second definition what it is, which is racism.
Well, does that cut both ways now, though? See, because as you said, you pretty much identified it from the perspective of whites. Most blacks, I know many blacks who say that, yeah, they understand if you're choosing or selecting anything based on color or denouncing someone, they recognize the racism. But many black Americans or other minority Americans are worldwide, don't consider it racism. They can't be racist because they are a, quote, minority color.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be careful about worldwide because I actually think that this is largely an American phenomenon. Recently in London, there was a little kerfuffle because a singer, I think it was Adele, had worn a Jamaican hairdo at a Jamaican festival in London. And Americans started freaking out about it. And all these black people of West Indian descent in London were like, stop, you're being stupid. Like, this is not what we think. So, but yeah, absolutely. Because they're defining racism not based on action, but on distribution of power and distribution of wealth, you can only be racist if you are on the top of this pyramid. If you're on the bottom of the pyramid, then racism doesn't apply because their entire definition only has to do with power.
So with all this concern and push for critical race theory training, why are so many blacks not only endorsing Trump, but solidly standing up for him and encouraging other blacks to stand up and do the same?
Well, because like any other group, they're not a monolith. I mean, honestly, the people who are pushing this stuff, this is not really coming from the traditional black civil rights movement or the black churches or any sort of power structure within black America. This is coming from white progressives, right? It was a white woman who wrote White Fragility. It's a white man who owns the company that's doing all of these trainings in the government. This is really something that white, progressive, well-off, college-educated people came up with to assuage their own guilt. Because the only other option would be to give their job to somebody of color or to, like, you know, give up their home in the Hamptons. So they're not going to do that. So instead, they buy a book and they go to brunch with their friends and talk about how they're, quote unquote, doing the work.
Christopher Rufo, who's with the Discovery Institute, had pointed out in some of his findings recently at the Sandia National Labs, which designs nuclear weapons, that they held a mandatory retreat titled White Men's Caucus on Eliminating Racism, Sexism, and Homophobia in Organizations. That title kind of says everything, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, look, if in fact that's what it was doing, if in fact they found that there were, and there may be, barriers to participation in the sciences for people in the black community, look, there are. It's called the education system, and a real good answer would be something like charter schools, right? Like, that's how you open these doors. I wouldn't have any problem with that. But instead, what they did was, you know, have these guys sit down and write confessions, like Maoist-style apologies to people of color for everything that they've done in their lives. You know, it really smacks of the Chinese Cultural Revolution. It's scary stuff.
Well, the whole thing, obviously, as you said, is built so much on you. You have to feel guilty. If you're white, you have to be guilty. If you're a certain age, if you're a certain income, if you live in a nice neighborhood, it's, you're exercising your privilege to call police for your protection. I mean, it doesn't stop once you start this train moving.
No, it doesn't. And listen, again, like I think it's value. I once wrote for the Weekly Standard what I call the conservative defense of privilege theory. I mean, it only went so far, but listen, obviously those of us who are, you know, who are blessed in different ways, that we, you know, that we didn't do anything to earn. If you're tall, if you're good looking, smart.
Thank you. And I appreciate the compliment, but go ahead. It's not all about me.
Right.
You, go ahead. It's not all about me.
Right. But, you know, we should. And yes, I think in this society, if you're a white person in this society, you probably do get some advantages. And it's useful to think about, am I getting advantages that I haven't deserved? And if you are, think about how you can try to fix that. The problem is that these people have become so completely obsessed with it that the individual ceases to matter at all. And they're treating the kid whose dad is a billionaire in Hollywood the same as they're treating the kid whose dad is a truck driver in Milwaukee. And these are clearly wildly different circumstances. And it doesn't make any sense to lump those two people together just because of their skin color. Once again, that would meet the classic definition of racist.
And, you know, in listening to you, I was suddenly flashed with a thought. I mean, I'm a father of two girls. You know, they're grown women now. But my two girls, you know, how I raised them and everything, and the values over society and the workplace. If you look at episodes of Mad Men as to how women were treated in the workplace during that period of time, or even the Dolly Parton show 9 to 5 as to what's going on now, I would not want my daughters going through that kind of stuff. And I know it existed then, but we have changed, moved forward. So there's an advantage if it's taken in the right way. But I fear right now that this is just being used as a hammer to destroy anything they don't like, not so much advance, but become more divisive.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely is. But again, the end game here is power. You know, Ibram Kendi, who has another one of these books that is one of the sort of like current seminal critical race theory books, he's very clear. He says that if there is a disparity between income, between any racial groups, that can only be a result of racism that needs to be fixed. Now, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense because Asians and South Asians in the United States, on average, earn more money than white people do. So did our white supremacy suddenly turn into Asian supremacy? Like, it's not very good white supremacy if that's the case. So,
we've seen lawsuits against Yale, Harvard, and other Ivy League schools making that very point.
Absolutely. Here in New York City, you know, we have these 8 very special public schools, high schools. I think they've produced something like 90 Nobel Prizes. And you can only get in through a test. 50 years ago, those schools were dominated by Jews. Today, those schools are dominated by Asian students. And the progressives want to get rid of the test and say, no, we're going to use other factors to decide. And it's absolutely discriminatory against Asians. I mean, there's just no way to suggest that it isn't.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us. And folks, again, in summation, he said the Trump administration is right to tackle it head on. It has potential to tear the nation apart. And I thank you for sharing some of your views and thoughts, sir. Would like to have you again in a future guest.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
You bet. David Marcus, Federalist New York correspondent. You can follow him at Twitter at Blue Box Dave, at Blue Box Dave. Critical racial theory. Training for federal employees. The president says it's a sickness. I tend to agree. I think it has some value, but as you just heard from David, if it's used to simply grab and hold and constitute power, the next turn of the dial will mean you're on the other side. I want to give you some good news about a hero from Pearl Harbor in a moment.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of and the way you look tonight.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Part of the critical race theory also involves believing that this nation is bad and evil in every way. And we have so many sins to atone for that we'll never be right. A Rasmussen poll released just late last week found 57% of likely U.S. voters agree with President Trump's statement restoring patriotic education is essential to rebuilding a shared national identity focused on common American values and virtues. He said, otherwise, we're seeing the riots by Marxist groups, left-wing indoctrination in our schools and universities. Many young Americans, he said, fed lies about America being a wicked nation plagued by racism. We are still trying to form a perfect union. Yes, we've had sins. Yes, we made mistakes, and we'll probably make more. But I hate to see every step forward to bring us together is pushed back three or four steps because we got to stop and apologize for something that was inadvertent and not even intended. If it needs to be addressed, let's address it. But don't just continue to villainize and vilify those who are caught in the midst of it. Ford Motor Company, I'm talking about corporations doing things that I disagree with, putting their money, they can do what they want. It's their private company. Here's something Ford is doing. I want you to know about it. They're launching a new line of apparel and merchandise. It's called the Proud to Honor merchandise. Supporting members of the U.S. Armed Forces and their families, military-inspired shirts, hats, gear being sold to raise money for DAV, which provides assistance for disabled veterans, and the Blue Star Families organization that helps military families deal with the challenges posed by service to our country. Ford, proud to honor. I'm glad to see them doing it. And they're not doing it just to make a buck or to do anything. They think, let me put it this way. I don't know for sure, but I would think they realize this is what America really is about. And maybe more will step forward and do the same. But here's one who will not be able to share in it to that extent. Leighton Banks of Dallas, Texas, enlisted in the Navy at the age of 17. And then he was married 3 months before December 7, 1941. At that time, he was 20 years old. He was on the USS Oklahoma battleship, moored at Ford Island, December 7th, 1941. Multiple aerial torpedoes struck that battleship. It quickly capsized, trapping hundreds of sailors. And Banks was among the Oklahoma's 429 crewmen who died in the attack. The government has had an effort using DNA to do what it can to identify as many as it can. Navy spending 3 years recovering remains of the deceased. By 1947, they've been able to identify only 35 crew members, and many were subsequently buried in plots at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific, known as the Punch Bowl in Honolulu. In 2015, now using DNA, they began to exhume various unknowns from the punch bowl. And in the process, 78 years after he was killed in the attack on Pearl Harbor, they were able to identify Leighton T. Banks of Dallas, Texas. They hope to have the same success with others. They were buried away from their families, no official marker with their name, just among the casualties of Pearl Harbor, buried at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific. And, of course, we've had similar stories across the face of the globe where our troops have fought and died. Missing in action, killed in action, no real grave, no real way to bring them back. The Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, of course, originally came with the idea that it would honor all of those that we could not name or identify. DNA has changed a lot of that, where we can, if we can have any of the remains, we're often able to actually identify. And they get the proper and full respect and closure for what family still exists. U.S. Navy sailor, Leighton Banks of Dallas, Texas. Will soon be home. He will be buried in his home state of Texas. 78 years after he died in Pearl Harbor. I thank you as always for listening. I appreciate you spreading the word to others. You folks are making this program jump, major jumps of listenership, and I hear from folks all the time, and I do appreciate it. Thank you. We will be back tomorrow. We'll be back. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.